Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 297 for comics originally released on April 17th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Green Lantern New Guardians number 19. Now, this is halfway through the month of April, but this is the first DC comic we're talking about this month that's actually part of the new 52 universe, because we talked about Fables, which is Vertigo. We talked about Batman Little Gotham last week, which is kind of the kids' line. So this is the first one we're actually getting what they had billed as the WTF cover, which is a gatefold that flips kind of out from the inside or whatever. I found that aspect of this to be interesting on multiple levels. I mean, it answers the who is the new White Lantern. But, I mean, it's answered on the gatefold, and frankly, I felt it was a bit of a cheat.
I thought it was a complete cheat, because...
Hey, isn't this the kind of cheat, though, you think is going to be seen as a bait and switch by a lot of people?
I think it is, especially given how it's like the reveal on the gatefold cover, because, I mean, I don't want to spoil the thing, but...
But that's the point. The cover inside essentially spoils it in a way. And I think people who are intrigued by that are going to be disappointed by the story.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole gimmick is playing to reader curiosity, you know, trying to entice people. Oh, that's interesting. I should check that out. But I think in this age of essentially reader apathy, that's a really questionable marketing strategy. And I've had very mixed feelings on the whole thing going in. This one leaned towards the spoiler aspect of it. Others were, wow, if I'd known that before and hadn't been getting the title, that might have gotten me to get the title. And others of, well, that's just lame. Not many fell into that category.
I have been pretty unimpressed by all of the gatefold covers I've personally flipped open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them were worth the gimmick. You know, it just, none of them have really been, wow, that's cool. They've been, okay.
The whole gimmick reeks of a certain desperation of, well, it's how our marketing isn't working. Well, let's try this. And I appreciate that they're trying, but I think they need to try harder. And I think part of the problem is the stories they are trying to market. In this particular case, this is part 11 of 13. So getting a solicit for just this chapter of that story is a little difficult. And as a kind of a penultimate chapter, this story is about as accessible as you would expect. I mean, again, 11 chapters into the Wrath of the First Lantern story, a lot of ground's been covered, so it's not particularly easy to get into.
It was one of the better chapters, though. I mean, some of those earlier chapters were really weak, in my opinion.
I think the problem the earlier chapters had is they were redundant, and it was hitting the same story beat of the First Lantern looking at the history of certain characters, saying, well, what if I tweak this? And it was, I thought, interesting for each one, but in total where it's like, well, I just saw this for four or five other characters. Move on. And I guess my question to you is, did you find them weak individually or weak because they were redundant?
Kind of both.
Okay.
I didn't care for the individual stories. And then by the time I read the third really similar one, I was like, it really colored my opinion of the whole storyline in a bad way.
There was a term that was applied to the Babylon 5 TV series when it came out, 15, 20 years ago, of holographic storytelling, where the individual episodes were good, but when you kind of layer them on top of each other in total, the ones before and after a given episode kind of add new context and dimensionality to it, bringing it, you know, to a deeper story. And I think the exact opposite of that applied to the earlier chapters here, where regardless of what you think of the individual, you know, wow, what the life of Guy Gardner versus, you know, Kyle or whatever, you know, those individual issues, when you layer them on top of each other, they subtract from each other because it's so similar. It's almost a paint by numbers.
It brings up another interesting aspect of crossovers for me. Mm-hmm. And that is I have a certain difficulty with a crossover when the story is really explicitly continued from one book to another and I'm not reading all the books, you know, because then you feel like, oh, you're missing something if you don't get these other chapters.
Right.
But then when I am getting all the books and they, you know, do what I would like if I'm not getting the books, then I just kind of feel like it's really disjointed because it, like in this case, I don't think the story has got any kind of strong, consistent, logical flow from, you know, part one, two, three, four, five. I mean, some of these ones in the other books are, you got like the Mogo storyline going on in the one book and you got this other thing going on in the other book. I don't see those. I mean, if I read them in the right order, you know, like 8, 9, 10, 11, and I don't feel like I'm reading one story. I just feel like I'm reading this set of things that sort of go together, which on one hand, if I was only reading a couple of those books is good, right? But then I'm reading all of them and they're explicitly marked with numbered parts. I feel like I'm missing something there. I mean, I feel like if they number the parts as opposed to just putting a banner on it saying these are all part of the Wrath of the First Lantern event, but they're not necessarily numbered, then I'd probably be more accepting of the fact that they're just disjointed stories that are taking place in the same kind of context. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I would equate it to reading a novel in which different chapters are covering kind of different plot lines within the novel that intertwine, interrelate to varying degrees, and build up to that conclusion, which is kind of what I see here. You know, the stuff that's going on over with, you know, Mogo and over on Oa and stuff like that didn't really play into this issue, but I think the events of this issue and those other issues are going to build, hopefully, in the next two issues to that grand conclusion and whatnot. But it's a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. If they've got stuff where they've got one through line through all the titles, it kind of forces people to try to read it or guess at what they missed to understand the story. If they go with kind of the parallel threads that intertwine to varying degrees but can almost stand on their own, which is more like what they did here, then people who are reading it all feel, again, it's a little disjointed. But then I think what was compounded both in this story and in the death of the family of story in the Batman stuff is you'll hit a couple of points where it is redundant here with the First Lantern and examining the lives of the characters in the Batman stuff when they all encounter the Joker at the end and stuff with the dinner plate or whatever. It goes towards, you know, you told me to read it in this order. I did. I felt you were hitting the same story beat over and over and over again, and it lessens the whole. So, you know, if they try to make it standalone but hit the major story beats in each of the titles, that works for people reading the individual titles but not those reading it all. If they do a one through line, it works for those reading all of it but not those reading the individual titles. Who's the better one to hit, you know?
Right, and that's a, you know, I feel like I'm not happy either way. You know,
well, yeah, again, just damned if you do, damned if you don't. Right. It's
a no-win, right?
I'm not sure it's a no-win.
Well,
but it's
a win for a specific audience depending on the way that you choose to go.
I think there's a way to write a crossover that can please both audiences, but it's incredibly challenging to do without having certain issues that feel like they were side stories that don't matter to the big picture. I mean, we've seen this thing in major crossover events too, where at times some of the Civil War issues felt like they were Cliff Notes versions of the main series or vice versa, or, you know, some of the things tying into Infinite Crisis were little detours that really in the big picture didn't matter at all. So I've seen some cases where the individual side stories kind of fit into the big picture stood on its own, and it was a good balance. I'm thinking kind of Blackest Night and a few other cases, but it's few and far between. It's an incredibly challenging type of story to write, and therefore you're better off structuring your stories to where you don't need to deal with that. You know, here is one where, again, the last month or two of issues from these titles was so similar that people jumping in at that point are likely to jump out. It's like, well, they're just hitting the same story beats in all the titles. I don't need to get them all. That's the wrong message to send.
It, especially given that this is, I guess, Geoff Johns' swan song on, the Green Lantern franchise for now, that he helped relaunch and make a power at DC. I mean, it's like between Green Lantern and Batman, those were the two things that were strong enough that they were the reboot effect of the New 52 had relatively little effect on those two families, because they were both really strong franchises. And just to see him go out on, a couple of back-to-back, what I feel are fairly weak stories compared to, things like the Sinestro Corps War and, Blackest Night. And there are several, the introduction of the colored cores and all this really great stuff that's gone on. It's just kind of sad to me to see it kind of plod out on this really weak note. And maybe the next issue is going to be just knock my socks off or something, as they finish up with a bang with the number 20 issues. But
well, this continues in Red Lantern 19 next, so I'm not expecting the next issue to be the highlight.
No, I know.
But then Green Lantern 20 is the end of it.
I'm not holding my breath for Red Lanterns being something that I'm like, wow, that was really great.
Would be impressive if it was, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the lesser of the various titles, unfortunately. But I agree with you. This is not the high note for these creative teams to go out on, given all the great work they've done in the past. And it's one of those things where I think they're banking to a large degree on the fact that people have been reading all of the titles for a long time. Because I think in some cases, if you've only been reading New Guardians and not the other titles, you're going to be wondering, who the heck is Simon Baz? Oh, that's the one they've said was the new Green Lantern. That may be all some readers know about them, about the character, if they haven't been reading that title. This isn't a completely incomprehensible story, but things were left out of this issue because they're in the larger story, somewhere. And some of them are minor things that aren't important, but could have and possibly should have been in here to make it more accessible. I mean, the name of the first Lantern, Volthoom, not really mentioned in here, and the fact that he's the first Lantern isn't really explicitly stated. Sinestro mentions, oh, you've joined him, haven't you? And didn't really clarify who him is that he thinks Kyle has joined.
Has Volthoom, as an aside, been around the DC universe as a name of some mystical thing or something?
Yes, yes, he has. Okay. I'm glad you asked. Remember the various crime syndicates over the years? Mm-hmm. Go back to the original one. That was the Earth 3, I think it was, Justice League. They had Power Ring, who had been given his power, I think, by a genie, it may have been some other thing, called Volthoom. So that's who powered him, who had cursed him or whatever. So that's when they named the first Lantern, I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting.
When I hear Volthoom, I always just kind of go towards, it sounds like something that Doctor Strange would have been saying in a spell when Stan Lee was writing it, by the mystic ring of Volthoom.
Or one of the battles in the Lord of the Rings, Yeah. It was the battle at Volthoom, So, it's got that kind of a ring to it, definitely. This was a good issue. It wasn't a great issue. Certainly not a jumping on point. But at this point, give it a month. We'll have jumping on points, hopefully.
Yeah.
I've been reading the Green Lantern titles for ages. Through, obviously, the entire, post-Flashpoint continuity for the entire 2 years so far of that. The entire, pre-crisis to Flashpoint continuity for those 25 years. And a good couple of years, five or whatever prior to that. So, I've got the history, I'm enjoying a lot of what they're doing, but I really wish they would get back to closer to done-in-one stories. Not that they don't continue, but have more payoff per issue, and also make them easier to solicit that way and give people more jumping-on points. Tell big, grand stories, but do them in very focused chunks with good payoff. I enjoyed this, but I can see where a lot of people might not.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty average story, 3 out of 5.
For me, it actually gets the 4. I'm not going to say it was the strongest of 4s, but I can certainly see where you're coming from on that.
I was at a 4 until I got to what I thought was a huge cheat on Simon Baz as the White Lantern.
I can totally understand that. I can see that. I can That's actually got me sitting here rethinking my rating. I'm going to stick with the 4, but you've got a very valid point there. To me, that's as much a weakness of the marketing as the story. Of course, I've knocked points off that way before.
I don't want to spoil it, but we have a spoiler tag on the forum now. So anyone who hasn't read this or wants to talk about what specifically that was, go on the forum and maybe the DC thread or even start a new thread about Green Lantern or, you know, whatever. And we'll talk about the specifics of what I had an issue with here. And I think John had that same issue, but I don't want to just spoil it here on the show.
Yeah. And if you want to talk about the gatefold covers just as in general, feel free to start a thread up on that. I'm curious what people are thinking of those. Because, again, a few of those I thought were, wow, they should have put what they revealed on the inside on the outside so people might have picked it up. In a few cases, it was cheats. In other cases, it was, yeah, whatever. But I'm curious what people kind of thought of that, too.
Okay, next we've got Daredevil, The Man Without Fear, number 25, Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. I've been really liking this Mark Waid incarnation of Daredevil. There were a couple of issues along the way that, you know, kind of, you know, went one way or another. This issue I really, really enjoyed. I mean, we get a little more of Matt and Stick, who was introduced, I believe, by Frank Miller
back in
the day. I really like the way that they draw now, when you're seeing kind of like what Matt sees with his radar sense, and it was like maybe Marcos Martin who came up with that.
With the radar vision kind of look?
Yeah.
I thought we had seen that occasionally back in the day. I don't think that's new to this volume.
Okay.
It's used exceedingly well in this volume. Don't get me wrong.
Just, the way that they do it, it just seems like the artists on this volume all have a similar enough style that it looks very consistent from issue to issue, and I just don't recall it looking just like that before. I mean, I know we've seen images that portray it, but the way that they've been using it here has been really good. I just like this idea that somebody's out creating daredevils, you know, with the, you know, trying the different acts, you know, trying the chemical accident, the radioactive chemical accident that gave him his powers, and the reveal, and again, this was a good reveal. I don't want to give it away either, but the reveal that happens in the sporting goods store with the guy that he's fighting, I was like, wow, you know, that was really cool.
That ended the issue on a really strong note. That's got me really looking forward to that next issue. This is a title that's been really fun to kind of watch, because I've had mixed feelings throughout the 25 issue run. I've never thought it was horrible or anything, but there are a few. It's like, you know. But I like how this title has been slowly building up kind of story elements that have had unexpected payoffs down the line. There are aspects that came together in this issue that are seeds that Waid had been planting throughout the entire run of this. And there are a couple of places in here where Mark Waid did some clever things without coming across as, hey, I'm trying to be clever. Some of the stuff they do with Larry in particular, here and stuff. The villain we get introduced here, Ikari, great addition to the Daredevil mythos. This, the costume design I love. This is the kind of character that if he doesn't become a fixture in the Rogues Gallery or whatever for Daredevil, I will be sorely disappointed, because it just seems like a great character. And, you know, some issues cover a lot of ground, and we talk about just how much story there was in there and stuff. This was the kind of issue that covered less ground, but in more detail, and not in a decompressed manner. If anything, it was kind of the opposite. And there's really only a couple of scenes in here, but those scenes get the needed detail, the kind of it's the equivalent of like a close-up shot versus a long shot or whatever in a TV show or a movie. We get the time spent in the fight scene, in some of the other stuff, to really flesh it out. It's not just, and they fight. It's, no. We're getting some detail here. We're getting some, I don't say minutiae or whatever, but they're fleshing out aspects of the story and bringing the detail to life. I'm having a hard time articulating this, but there's an aspect of this where could some of this have been done a lot faster? Yes. Should it? Hell no. This was done at the right pace for what they were trying to do, covered a lot of ground, and did it in a way that built up the character, the plot, and really kind of came together beautifully. Mark Waid's doing a great job on this title. The art teams are doing a fantastic job. This is one that if you've been a fan of Daredevil in the past and are not reading this title, you really should check it out. I thought this was a great issue, but I think part of what also made this issue great was the issues leading up to it that set the seeds and planted the plot points and stuff like that for them to come to fruition here and in future issues.
Well, that's Waid's strength, right? Waid, to me, and what I like about his writing is he tells really excellent stories over the course of multiple issues, but each individual issue almost always, to me, feels like I got a really significant chunk of story. There's some really solid story beats. He knows how to leave off an issue on a beat that makes you want to come back and not having it be just some kind of cheap cliffhanger, usually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, he tells stories that work, in my opinion, for both the trade paperback presentation and also pay off really well for people who are reading the monthlies. And that's a very rare skill in comic book writing, in my opinion. You know, so many, you get writers, you get one or the other. You don't get both.
There are very few writers out there that I think are true masters of the comic book storytelling craft. There are a ton that I think are just wonderful at it and brilliant at it, but few that I think just consistently knock it out of the park. And this was an issue where it was just great cover to cover, and then there was just this one spot that just knocked it up a whole nother level. It's like, you know, I very impressed with what the art team has done. Again, the Waid is just at the top of his form in this issue. Certainly what you're talking about is, I would say, one of his strengths as a writer. I would not say it's his sole strength, because he's great at character moments. What you point out, though, is he uses continuity in the right way. He has things that build up over issues to give it a sense of there's more to this than just the one issue. There's a reason to go hunt down previous issues, to wait for the next issue and to go get those. He's just done a fantastic job here and on most of the other books he's ever written. I would be hard pressed to name any title Waid has done that I thought, wow, this just isn't working. There was one that, until I understood his take on the character, would have been one I might have mentioned, and that was his run on Captain America. But then I had heard, I think it might have been Kurt Busiek who had pointed out that basically it's, you know, that Captain America, is the guy with the plan. It's like, okay, that seemed more like Batman than Cap to me, but then the more I thought about it, the more it gelled, and then I realized, oh, this is how he's been, that was his take on the character, and I just hadn't gotten it. Once I did, totally different view on it and stuff. But very much looking forward to where this story arc goes, where this character goes. To me, this is a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I give it 5 out of 5 also. And this series, you know, this whole run has been a 5 out of 5. I'll also point out that I think that Marvel is doing something with this book that they're not doing with a lot of their books. You know, most Marvel books nowadays, they just by nature have a rotating stable of artists on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get a feeling on a lot of the books that when one artist goes off and another one comes on, it's noticeable. You know, I guess that's just the best way. Not sometimes better than others, but it's definitely, it kind of just is, well, right there in your face that, oh, this is a different artist this issue.
I think that goes, the credit for that goes to the editor of Stephen Wacker.
Right.
Who had also done 52 and a few other things. So he knows how to do the rotation of art teams and stuff in a fairly seamless manner. And I think it's also why Waid's able to kind of do some of the stuff he's doing here and not get sucked into, you know, various, you know, crossovers and other things going on in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's just done in a really good way, and it should be done more. It doesn't seem to be done more, you know, so it's just, I've been really enjoying how this has been going on in this book, and this series is well-deserving of the accolades that it's getting, and it I don't think it sells as well as it should sell, given the quality of the series.
I think this is going to be one that people come back to in future years, having, you know, belatedly discovered as a really good run on Daredevil, if not potentially one of the landmark runs. We'll see how it goes. I don't think it's getting the recognition or the readership it deserves either.
Okay, you want to move on to our indie book. We've got Bloodshot number 10 from Valiant. This is part of the Harbinger Wars, I guess, mini story. Well, event is probably too strong of a word, but
it's a crossover.
I really enjoyed this issue. You know, Bloodshot, for me, it's not my top favorite Valiant book, but you know, we've said before, I like all the Valiant books, and you know, even something that's not my top favorite one is still, you know, in my top, you know, probably 15 or 20 of all the books I read, you know, which, given I read over 100, is, you know, still pretty darn good. And this issue, I thought, was, you know, even the last couple of issues, I thought, have been much stronger than the first few issues. This book has been getting better and better as it's been going on, I think.
I would agree with a lot of that. This was a little bit different of an issue than a lot of the ones we've had before. It was much more of a quiet pause in the story, if you will, or kind of a slow start to this part of the story. It dovetails wonderfully with the Harbinger Wars, and I think it'd be very satisfying to people who are only reading Bloodshot and not that other series, mini-series as well. Whether, you know, this is quite the standalone arc that they're pitching it as in the solicits or not, within Bloodshot, again, I think you could just read the title and understand what's going on, which I really applaud. But this issue kind of lacked anything in the way of, you know, just major action or major character development. But it also does more than just kind of move chess pieces on the board. But this is kind of a, you know, major things have happened. We need to give them a quiet moment to kind of pause, reflect, get ready for what comes next. Kind of like how the Sword would have, from the Luna Brothers, a really action-filled issue, and then more of a kind of a plot character kind of a thing, and then reverse, kind of, you know, flip between those two modes. This is, again, more of the, let's, you know, set the stage kind of a thing. And again, a lot of what we've gotten in this title before has been heavy on the action and stuff like that. So this is a little bit different than we've seen before. And we do get some action in this, but it felt more like, again, we need to kind of reset things for the start of this arc. And again, I don't mean that in a bad way. It was the right move to do, and it was well done here. And I think it's a good, again, dovetailing with the crossover they're doing. And I like how they're trying to keep what's going on in this title versus Harbinger Wars in parallel without really kind of duplicating, yet not necessitating must read this, then that, and then bounce between. So like we were talking earlier about how do you set up these kinds of crossovers and not have the redundancy, not have the extraneous, well, you can skip this. I think they're doing a really good job here.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a 4 out of 5 comic. You know, specific things in this issue that I really liked. I mean, I'm growing to like even more and more Bloodshot's power set and just how the nanites are working with him and his ability to communicate to them. And they had some nice moments with that and just how that works and how he can, you know, even remotely talk to people, you know, from, you know, them transmitting and stuff. It's just kind of cool. You know, the character, I think, is, there's some nuances to the character here that I don't recall being featured as power set things that he had back in the original run.
I think the remote transmission thing might be new to this series. I don't recall, but a lot of the other stuff...
And that's the one I'm mainly thinking about.
Yeah. And I think if I'm not sure even if he had considered the idea back in the day, if it would have worked or not based on how they'd set him up. In either case, it's easy to kind of dismiss this character as, oh, he's a Punisher with a healing factor. It's like, no, there's more to the character here. For me, this was a 3 out of 5, a strong 3, but the part of the reason for that was the art. Normally, I'm very much a fan of Barry Kitson's art and stuff. I think he did a good job in this art, but I don't think it was his best work. And I'm thinking some of that was the inking, because there are certain pages here where it's nice and crisp and what I would expect. There are other pages where it almost feels not undone, but a little muddier, if you will. Is that kind of, you see, it kind of makes sense?
I guess. Like, what pages are...
Page flip before the staple. We've got some places there where, you know, like the close-up on the face and a few places like that where it doesn't seem to have quite the clean line style that I normally expect out of Kitson. There are a few other pages that compare that to... Oh, like the opening page is another example of that. Whereas I think the final page of the story had a lot cleaner, tighter.
I can see what you're saying. I mean, I think some of the inking is a bit heavy.
He did some of the inking, and some of the inking he did not do.
Right.
And I think the other inker's style just didn't click as well.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying now that you mention it. I didn't really get taken out of the story by it, but there is a heavier line to the inking on some pages, and other pages it's a little more nuanced. Like, particularly the last page of the story, you can see there's some very thin, nuanced ink lines on that page that aren't present on, for instance, the first page.
Flip back one page, because the second to last page, I think, was one that probably Kitson did himself, but the preceding page
right.
is not. And that's where I noticed the difference. It didn't totally bounce
right
me out of the
right
story.
Next to each other, yeah.
But it was something that made me think, wow, I was expecting better because it was Kitson art. And it may have also just been some other aspect of the production stuff, you know. I don't know.
I see your point. I mean, it's something that I wouldn't, again, I wouldn't give it a 5 out of 5 because of that. But I really enjoyed the story in this issue a lot. And I like those kids, the Psyots, that were rescued.
I think they were better used and set up in Harbinger Wars. And that may have actually been a different set of kids than this group, actually, that I'm thinking of. They're doing some interesting stuff. I want to see kind of how all of this plays out. I'm starting to think that we're going to have not just a 3-way war, but possibly a 4-way war based on some of the solicits and stuff, which is interesting. So we'll see how that all goes. I'm really enjoying what Valiant's doing. They're doing great work.
Now, this is the relaunch is... been wildly successful. It seems like it's been around longer than it actually has. I mean, it's only been a year, you know, not even.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, the amount of really great comics they put out is much to their credit.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. Anyone not checking out Valiant, I mean, do yourself a favor. They're going to have some dollar versions of their first issues coming out soon. Check those out.
Yeah, that's a very low price way to get into the Valiant. Okay. Anything else that you want to cover? Any other books you read?
I read a ton of other books. I'm still amazed that we're just now really kind of starting into the major action in Age of Apocalypse. But nothing that really kind of jumps out at me at the moment is must-talk-about stuff. I mean, usual good stuff, but nothing that's just, again, leaping out at the moment.
I had a tremendous amount of work this week, plus I am still prepping for my Guinness thing that I ended up having to put off. I think since the last time I talked on the show, for people who are not on the forum, it was originally going to have been last week on April 20th, and there was a death in my family. I was had to put that off, and it's now going to occur on May 18th, Saturday, May 18th. So if anybody's in Southern California and they're interested in coming by, check out the thread on the forum about it, or you can PM me on the forum and we'll talk about it. I'd love to have anybody who's around in the area stop by on May 18th. I'm going to have pizza and snacks and non-alcoholic drinks.
And if you've ever wanted to see what around 90,000 comics look like, this is your chance.
And there's going to be free comics there, too, because I got a bunch of duplicate comics that I'm getting rid of. Duplicates do not count towards the total in for the world record. So I got several long boxes full of free comics that people can walk away with. Big piles of free comics 1 week after Free Comic Book Day, or 2 weeks after
Comic Book Day.
So there is that. We got some other announcements about that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, this Friday is going to be our monthly previews teleconference and stuff. It'll be on May 3rd. It starts at 5 p.m. Pacific, 6 Mountain, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. And if you're in other time zones, I'll let you do the math. I'm doing good to get those. As always, you can join the call whenever you want, leave whenever you need to. Basically, we get on Skype. We use previews as kind of the nominal agenda. We usually talk for about an hour or so before we really get into what people are getting and stuff. It's a great chance to kind of ask questions about, hey, do you know about this artist? Is this story any good? Or would I like this title or not? Or just anything else kind of comic related. You know, I will be running the call. All you got to do is just text me on Skype. If you don't have me as a contact, you'll need to add me. My handle is TheJohnMayo. We've got information on this on the forum and stuff. I usually get on Skype a little before the call starts. And then I just start it when the first person gets in touch with me. It's usually a lot of fun, and again, great way to kind of get some information about are some of these titles right for you or not. And then basically the crack of dawn, the next morning, Saturday, May 4th, is the deadline for the submissions for the preview spotlight. As always, just send the clips into the guys at comicbookpage.com. We send out emails every month on, you know, hey, here's a reminder and stuff. If you want to get added to that list, just email us and say, hey, add me to the list. As always, just send in a short clip of, I'm interested in this, it's on this page, here's why you should check it out or something. Listen to some of our past preview spotlight episodes if you want to get a feel for what the clips usually sound like.
Yep, and that same Saturday, May 4th, that the clips are due is Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, so this is a great opportunity to really kind of help out your retailer and stuff. Introduce your friends and coworkers to comic books and stuff. Let them know where they can get some free comics either for them or for their kids. It's essentially an open house day for all of the comic stores participating in this. It's a great outreach program for the comic industry. So, you know, don't just go grab your comics and leave and stuff. Most stores have sales. They have other things going on. You know, spend some money at the store, help them out in terms of getting other feet through their doors.
It's you know, a week, if you're listening to this when it goes up or within a couple of days, you know, it's coming up. You can check the comic book shops in your area. You can go to various, I think if you, it's called Comic Shop Locator.
Yeah.
.com. You can find local comic shops. They have contact info. Give them a call and ask them what they're doing. A lot of comic shops put on events. You know, they'll have artists or writers there signing. They might have characters in costume for the kids. You know, lots of these shops actually capitalize on Free Comic Book Day to make it an event. You know, they have things there. They might have a sale going on. And they really make it into something fun. And, you know, I think it's really great. I typically will take that day and I just drive around the Orange County and Los Angeles area. And I try to visit five or six different shops that have different kinds of events going on and just check out all the kind of stuff that's going on. If I see a nice bin sale, I might be grabbing up those last couple of 150-cent comic books to nudge my Guinness total up just that little extra bit before to offset all the duplicates and non-comics I had to take out of my total as I've been scrubbing my my count list in preparation for the 18th.
Yeah. And again, I think a lot of people aren't even aware that, to a degree, that comics are still coming out or what's in current comics. So, you know, in addition to the sales and stuff they've got, it's just a great chance to potentially expand the readership of comics. Even if people don't go back to the stores, they're at least now aware where the store is. It's a easy and great way to kind of you know, pay back the stores that you shop at, that you go to on occasion and stuff, just by helping them get the word out that they exist. And, you know, again, free comics. People are usually willing to go out for something like that. Then we've got one other announcement to be making, yeah.
Yeah, so I will be stepping down as co-host of Comic Book Page as of episode 300.
Weekly Comic Spotlight 300. Weekly, we're at like episode 728 or something, yeah. Bob.
Weekly Comic Spotlight 300. 300 was a good number for John Constantine. It'll be a good number for me. Yeah, actually, I think as you counted things up, I will at that point have been on with that one and then the special 300 episode of Back Issue Spotlight that'll go out later that same week. We'll have been on 589 episodes of various comic book page podcasts for a total of over 567 hours of podcasting.
Yeah, we've been doing this for quite some time. We have not missed a single week of getting the stuff out for the Weekly Comic Spotlight in, well, almost 300 weeks, which is a long time. So if anyone's interested in stepping in as co-host and stuff, please contact me. Either send me an email or send me a PM on the forum. If you're only interested in co-hosting some types of episodes, like the Preview Spotlight or the Mayo Report Comics or something like that, please let me know. Don't feel like you need to read a ton of comics in order to be a co-host and stuff. But obviously you've listened to, you know, kind of where I'm at in terms of what I'm reading and stuff like that. Certainly reading more would help, but it's not that big of a deal. I mean, right now, Bob, I'm reading, what, about twice as many comics as you are on a weekly basis?
Yeah.
So if somebody's willing to step up to the plate, certainly would like to have a co-host and stuff. If not, I'll probably just do this solo for a bit. But in my mind, there's kind of three types of podcasts. There's the solo guy just talking to himself. There's two guys having a conversation, and then there's the bunch of guys. And when you get the bunch of guys, it's almost like you're overhearing a conversation at the booth next to you in the restaurant and stuff. There's a time where that's a lot of fun and stuff. Personally, that's not the kind of podcast I like to do. I like to have more of just a one-on-one conversation with somebody. So if somebody's interested in stepping up to the plate and stuff on that, please drop me a line. Let me know both what you're interested in doing, what you're willing to commit to, what kind of stuff you read, and we'll talk. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That should do it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Teen Titans number 19 from DC, FF number 6 from Marvel, and Jupiter's Legacy number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.